Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Season 6, episode 102. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined once again. He's sitting in for David Todd, Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday. It's the start of the Steelers 2016 offseason program today.
Yeah, we are getting close. It's a happy Monday, Dave. And as I mentioned before in a podcast, I double-checked. I went into the back end of the website and looked, and it looks like Steelers Depot's turning 8 years old today. The very first, like, Hello World article was April 18th, 2008. So, happy birthday to Steelers Depot.
Yeah, there we go. And I think that coincides, Troy Polamalu's birthday today, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see if I'm right here. No, that's actually April 19th. That would be Tuesday. I was close, but man, where's the time gone?
And then the very first actual, like, Steelers article was 3 days later, and it was entitled by Dave Bryan, Steelers could trade out a first round. Ooh, could that be true this year? Could the prediction happen 8 years later?
I would be surprised.
I think it's actually what you said in 2008 as well. So.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this team has never traded out of the first round.
Right.
And if they were to trade down, you know, how far down would they go? Mm-hmm. You know, they would have, you know, as Kevin Colbert likes to say, there would have to be a selection of guys that they like and knew that they would be able to get. Mm-hmm. I guess never say never, right?
Right. I don't see it either, though, just because it's not their MO. I mean, I'm never opposed to it. No one should ever be opposed to it. It's very easy to come up with reasons why any team should trade down, but in all likelihood, they'll probably stay put and maybe move up, because if they go anywhere in the draft, it's usually up.
So you would see more likely for them to move up than move down.
I do, based on their past history.
And I've got that written somewhere on the site over the years of the times they've moved up and down in the draft. Normally we see that, I think, most recently in the middle rounds, right?
Shamarco comes to mind.
Shamarco and, I'm trying to remember what was before that.
We'll have to pull that post up. Maybe we could find it and put that back up at the top. I haven't read it, so I'd be interested in it.
Yeah, and perhaps I'll put that on my to-do list along with taping boxes together now.
Right, the move. It's pretty close.
Yeah, my wife has started that undertaking, and there'll be a few arguments moving forward.
that's the worst part about moving. That's got to be – and you're moving cross-country. You're not going down the street.
Absolutely. So things can't just be thrown together, per typical local moves, per se. Talking about I guess we shouldn't call it a huge surprise. We would call it a moderate surprise based on the timing of it. And this happened – all news seems to happen after we get off the podcast. So with today being Monday, I would expect at some point during us recording this that maybe some pre-draft visitors will be announced. But on Friday, the Steelers finally parted ways with Cortez Allen. The timing of it is a bit peculiar. We'll get into that a little bit here. Like I said, probably not a big surprise overall. I kind of thought that if this was going to happen, it would have happened prior to the start of the new league year. Being as how that didn't happen, I kind of looked at it as the possibility of Cortez being allowed to hang around and maybe compete for a roster spot. There was the rumor out there that Cortez was asked to take a pay cut this year. And before I turn it over to you, Cortez was set to earn $4.4 million in 2016. you know, whether or not he was asked to take a pay cut and how much that pay cut could have possibly been, I'm not sure we'll ever know. But one could speculate. I'm not going to go as far as and speculate that they asked Cortez to go down to the minimum, but I could foresee them maybe going to him and say, look, you need to take a $2 million pay cut or a, let's say, a $2.4 million pay cut, and we need your decision by the start of the off-season program. And if you decide not to do it by then, we're not going, you know, we're going to cut you right before the start of the off-season program. Your thoughts?
I actually think that scenario makes a ton of sense, Dave. You know, and I don't think – I want to give credit where credit is due. I think it was Dale Lawley that floated out the idea that, you know, you don't want to have him hang around. If you're worried about the injury risk so much, and we basically know the big catalyst behind Cortez Allen being released is his history of injuries, especially the knee, which appears to be a chronic issue that's probably never going to get much better in time. And if you have those kind of guys and they're working out and practicing, even in a lighter environment like this, if something really crazy happens and there's an injury, it's harder to release him. If for some reason the guy has to go on IR, then you're owing that salary. You know, there's a lot of, I think, financial, you know, ramifications to that. And I think it makes sense. I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, the reports were that he was asked to take a pay cut, and maybe he didn't want to do that. And he wanted to play to what the contract he signed and what his worth was. And that's an understandable position for a lot of players. You look at around the league, the Brickshaw Ferguson with the Jets was asked to take a pay cut. He just decided to retire instead and just hang him up. You know, I know this is certainly not the majority of fans, but there is a minority that's happy to see Cortez go. They were, you know, pretty gleeful about it. I just think it's kind of sad, Dave. You know, this is almost, you know, not even 2 years from signing his extension, and now he's a Friday news dump of getting released. And this is a guy that had a promising career. I think he was a talented guy physically. I thought mentally there certainly were some problems, but, you know, I was hoping that he could, you know, work through them, or at least we could see if he could work through them. And we never really got that opportunity. And it was just the injuries. You know, he's got that kind of tall, you know, wiry frame, and maybe that did him in on his knees.
We could put on our tinfoil hats, too, and go the route of maybe Cortez Allen wasn't healthy enough to be released come the start of the new league year. Maybe that knee and whatever, you know, off-season or going back to last year, I guess it would be more precise. Maybe he had another, you know, type of procedure on his knee, and they waited until the pre-workout physicals to see, you know, if he was healthy enough to you know, take part in those. That might be a little bit of stretch as far as speculation goes. One thing I wanted to look for right after it was announced is, A, whether or not he showed up on the NFL official transaction wire as a Friday release, because sometimes you'll hear about a player getting cut and it isn't really made official until maybe the next business day. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case with Cortez. He showed up on the NFL transaction on their official list on Friday. And the other thing I was looking for was there any kind of a failed physical or any type of an injury designation attached to that? And it turns out that there wasn't. So I think the best case speculation, if there is such a thing, is that he was asked to take a pay cut. He had up until the start of the off-season program to agree to it. And if he didn't, then they cut him loose, and that would seem to match. And I think a lesson to be learned here, as far as us and outsiders go like that, is moving forward with players, you know, kind of teetering on, well, will he be a a cap casualty and all like that, is to take into account the start of the off-season program.
Yeah, that seems to be the latest that a team would do it. I want to ask you, Dave, because Matthew Marcy and I were having this conversation on Twitter, and neither of us are the cap guy that you are. It doesn't appear that Cortez Allen is a post-June 1st cut. And, you know, I had said, someone had asked me about that, and I had said, well, if you can absorb the hit now instead of spreading it over the 2 years, it's better to do it now so you don't have that dead money, you know, in 2017. Matthew disagreed with that and said, the team isn't really saving any money because they can carry that additional space over into 2017. So if that makes sense to you, Dave, is what Matthew says is correct? And if so, why don't every team have one June 1st cut per year to save that money?
Well, I think, and my understanding of the CBA is even though it's later on in the off season here, is that they still could have designated him a post June 1st cut. Right.
But they did. It doesn't appear that they did.
No, and we'll know for here's one thing that I'm watching right now is the NFLPA's public salary cap report, mm-hmm. and that has yet to be updated. So in other words, the Steelers are still showing 77 players under contract. We'll know for sure when that kicks over. If that doesn't change in the next 3 or 4 days, then it means that they're having to carry his salary until June 1st. Mm-hmm. Okay. If it does click down as far as available cap space goes, then we know for sure it was a pre-June 1st cut. As far as the rest of the scenario goes, yes, the teams can roll over cap, available cap money. But on the flip side, they probably wanted the dead money off the books now. You've still got to account for the remaining prorated, signing bonus that's out there one way or the other. You're going to either pay the Piper now, part of it, or you're going to pay, the extra amount, mm-hmm. In the following season here. So
is there a benefit to not making him a post June 1st? Because I wish Matthew was here to explain his case, but it sounded like Matthew was saying that there really doesn't appear to be a strong reason to not make him a post June 1st.
Yeah, not when you look at the amounts involved here. I don't think, but here's the thing: they only cleared when you talk about, they use the rule of 51 during mm-hmm. the off season here, top 51 salaries. They really didn't save that much money by making him a pre-June 1st cut, because you got to think of the next available guy mm-hmm. outside of the top 51 has to move up into the 51. Mm-hmm. So even though technically when you look at the release, they saved $1.7 million in cap room. Well, if you subtract from that, the $525,000 salary of the 52nd player, they really only saved what, 1.1? Mm-hmm. I forget what the number I put out on Twitter was the other day. I see where Matthew's coming from, mm-hmm. because hey, you could just roll over whatever you don't, whatever you have left mm-hmm. over. There has to be some strategic reason why.
Right, that's what I was saying.
I'm at loss of what I'm at loss for what that might be.
I mean, my philosophy, not to bog down into this stuff too heavy, but my philosophy is if you can avoid dead money in the future and if you can afford the hit now, I'm all for it, because the less dead money in the future, I think the better off you are financially.
Well, here's the thing too: this team, who knows what might happen between now and the start of the new league year. I mean, start of June 1st, mm-hmm. As far as maybe somebody they want to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if they had designated Cortez as a post June 1st cut, then they're not going to see any savings mm-hmm. until after that date.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And I think that segues very nicely into someone that they could sign, someone that just got released yesterday, and we wrote about Brian Hoyer was released by the Houston Texans. And, that basically immediately some of the NFL guys were reporting the Steelers have interest, and it makes a lot of sense on paper. So, Dave, your thoughts?
I could see it mm-hmm. for the right deal. The question right now is how much interest will Brian Hoyer have? And you would think there's going to be some out there, not as a starter, obviously, right. but as a backup somewhere. And, what kind of money is he looking for? I mean, and how much money would the Steelers be willing to offer for a guy to be, let's say, a 2 or a 3-year backup to Ben Roethlisberger. And I mean, Hoyer is obviously a guy they've liked in the past. He spent what two to three weeks on the Steelers roster several years ago during that time that all those quarterbacks were injured. I think Todd Haley has spoken highly of Brian Hoyer, and I know Mike Tomlin has spoken very highly of Hoyer leading up to some Browns games, you know, as well, you know, and let's face it, he wasn't great. He wasn't all pro by any stretch of the imagination during his time with the Browns and the Texans, but he is a serviceable guy. I think despite all that happened to him last year, and I think one or two games really come to mind when you talk about his career last year with the Texans, were pretty brutal. But on the flip side, I think he still has the ability to be a guy to come off the bench and a guy that could give you some spot starts. Now, when you talk about a guy that you would be relying on starting for you four or five, six games in a row, and you know, he is what he is at that point. But I think it would make sense if the Steelers were to indeed have interest in him and be serious about signing him. One would think it would have to be a 2 to 3 year deal, maybe averaging around, I don't know, $2.5 million or so, because I think that's what Brian Hoyer's market value is right now.
I think it's a perfect marriage, Dave. And I mean, I don't know if he's going to end up here. Like you said, I'm sure there's going to be some interest. The Jets are reported to have interest. They still have a lot of quarterback issues without getting a deal done with Ryan Fitzpatrick, which, according to reports today, that deal's not going to happen prior to the draft. But I think it's a perfect marriage. I know Hoyer probably would like to come here, a place he's been before. Like you said, Dave, in 2012, he spent about 3 weeks in Pittsburgh to be the clear number two, knowing that, you know, there's always that risk for Ben Roethlisberger to get hurt. There's a door to be open for playing time. You know, you're not behind Tom Brady, a guy that, you know, almost never misses time, one ACL injury aside. For Pittsburgh, you're getting a veteran guy, a guy that started, a guy that's come off the bench. That's the perfect kind of type that I look for, Dave, when talking about a backup quarterback. I want someone that's, you know, has experience starting and experience coming off the bench and is prepared and always kind of at the ready. I thought he did well last year in Houston. Like you said, Dave, the kind of the big game that comes to mind is the loss to Kansas City in the wild card game, and that was an ugly game by Brian Hoyer. There's no, I'm not trying to defend it one bit, but when you're talking about a number two quarterback, you're not going to find the perfect guy. So everyone's going to have their holes. But I think Hoyer makes a ton of sense, and it would not surprise me in the least if he came in for a visit here pretty soon and if he got signed.
I could definitely see it. Who would you rather have, Bruce Gronkowski or Brian Hoyer?
I think Hoyer, because I mean Gronkowski's thrown how many passes in the last couple of years, and with the injury, I mean I like Gronkowski, but you know the team's been waiting for him to get healthy, and you know it's not like we've really seen a lot of body of work. I mean Hoyer's been in the league, he's been throwing. I mean he's thrown close to, I'm doing the rough math here, but I think close to 800 passes the last 2 years with Cleveland and Houston. This is a guy that's beaten the Steelers before. 2014, the big beatdown, even though Hoyer didn't, you know, have to do a ton in that game. He made a couple big plays. You know, that's what the Steelers signed with Mike Vick last year, a guy that beat the Steelers in 2014. So if you beat the Steelers, you kind of, you know, you're going to get noticed. You're not going to be forgotten about. So I take Hoyer over Gronkowski in kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, Hoyer's 3 years younger than Gronkowski. Gronkowski turned 33 in January. Hoyer, I think, is 30 right now. He fits the MO kind of what the Steelers look for as far as experience backups go. Will it be Gronkowski or Hoyer? I mean, is it now a situation where it's an either or?
I think it is an either or because you're still going to have Landry Jones for this year. So if you sign both, then you have four quarterbacks fighting for presumably three spots. You know, I don't really see a reason for that. You know, if you're going to sign Hoyer or Gronkowski, that's going to be your veteran backup. So I don't see a compelling reason to bring both in.
And you would think if something were to happen with Hoyer, it would happen over, you know, really prior to the draft at this point, I would think.
And I would, even though before the quarterbacks all, you know, everyone gets their quarterback.
Right, and you know, when you talk about the Steelers, even though they've paid some attention to quarterbacks so far during the pre-draft process, you know, we don't know how much of that's related to them being serious about drafting one, or is this them doing their diligence on these guys in case these guys become free agents in 4 more years, which really is an understandable scenario. You know, when you consider how long Ben Roethlisberger signed, you know, his new contract has him running through. This could be a situation where let's do a lot of homework on these quarterbacks, because should any of them become free agents in, you know, in another 4 years, we'll know a lot about them, and then we can make a decision of whether or not, A, to bring one in as, you know, an heir apparent to Roethlisberger, or a backup at the time.
Right. It's smart to do, and maybe they had interest in bringing in a rookie quarterback, but if they sign Hoyer, that could totally change the plan. You know, you have to just kind of adapt. There was no guarantee Hoyer was going to get released, or he could have gotten traded. I know Houston tried to trade him. Obviously, that didn't work. So you want to give yourself options, and I would love – Dave, you know me, I would love to get Brian Hoyer instead of burning a draft pick on one of these kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And at this point, once again, they haven't brought in a quarterback for a pre-draft visit. We'll see if they do at some point, but they only have a handful of visits, you know, left at this point. Right now, I think I'd be surprised if any quarterbacks are brought in right now. Back to Cortez here. Let me best way to phrase this, I guess, is how is he, did he, let's suppose he was offered a pay cut. Did he make the right gamble here?
Well, I mean,
by not taking one?
I'm not in his head. It's hard for me to say. I just think it's going to be tough to find work in the market whenever you kind of have that injury history. And it's hard for me to think he's going to get a lot more on the open market than whatever the pay cut Pittsburgh was asking him to take. And of course, you're going to a new system, you know, you're trying to learn it, and you're trying to stay healthy and be available with a new coaching staff who might not, you know, have the trust in you. This wouldn't be a coaching staff that gave you a 4-year extension worth $24 million. So I don't know what the exact situation. Obviously, Tomlin had pretty much soured on Cortez Allen, so maybe he felt like, I have no chance to make anything here, and I've lost the coaching staff's trust, and I'm going to be an afterthought. So, you know, I want to go somewhere else and try to start anew. So that's a really difficult question for me to ask. You can look at it on either side. I think there's even the possibility that if he looked at his market value and realizes that it's not what he wants it to be, he could retire. Just be seeing the wave of players that are retiring early. Obviously, Cortez does have a kind of seems like a long-term issue with his knees. That wouldn't surprise me either. So a very difficult question for me to answer, Dave.
His market value at most is $2 million, at most, right?
I mean, I honestly see it as a vet minimum deal right now, just because the health issue is such a big concern.
And he would be wise, whoever he did sign with, to sign a one-year deal.
Yeah, probably. Or, I mean, I maybe I'm almost thinking, like, just sign the biggest deal you can with the biggest. If you can sign a 2-year deal with a slightly bigger signing bonus, do that, because you need to get that guaranteed money, because I just don't know how long that knee's going to hold up.
Tennessee Titans going to have interest.
If there's a guy that wants him, it'd be Dick LeBeau. Go down there with Antoine Blake and all his friends. So, I don't know who it's going to be. It could be the Giants have signed all the Steelers. The Cardinals have signed all the Steelers. The Titans have signed all the Steelers. So those would be the three teams.
I guess the question now becomes is will he find a new home prior to the draft? You would think at this point, you know, knowing what his market value is, teams might say, well, let's see what happens in the draft, and then we'll see what's available out there.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, he won't. I mean, I can almost guarantee you he won't sign before the draft. Teams are going to, you know, see what they do in the draft, get a guy that's cheaper, younger, healthier. And then if there's a couple teams that are still looking to add, or if something happens in OTA, someone goes down or something like that, maybe Cortez could get a look. But there's no way he'll sign before the draft.
Now let's go back in time, and of course Kevin Colbert's going to get ripped for this, you know, signing Allen to the 4-year contract extension worth $24.6 million that they did back just prior to the start of the 2014 season. You know, You have to. It's a gamble at that point, especially Allen at that time. Now, I believe he was coming off of really, I don't want to say a breakout season, but a season where you saw, didn't he have a couple interceptions in the game against the Bengals that
mm-hmm.
year?
Pick six against the Packers. That was a big one.
And a forced fumble or two right around in there, and the arrow was finally kind of pointing up for Cortez Allen. And at that time, you know, you want to try, I guess it's almost, I don't want to compare it totally to the situation with Antonio Brown, but you had probably seen enough of him that you're not going to want to pay full market value for what a player might become. But, the Steelers obviously had a need to lock up somebody as far as secondary went back in 2014. 4 years, 24.6, maybe a tad high, average yearly value as far as that goes. But can you understand the reasoning behind why they did it?
I can't. I mean, I think you can both say it didn't work out, and I understand the move at the time. I don't think they have to be, mutually exclusive, Dave. And they were gambles. It was similar to, like you said, Antonio Brown. Though I'll say I think Cortez was more of a gamble. And similar, I think very similar to Marcus Gilbert. And then that worked out. So sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. You try to be proactive and thinking towards the future and get guys that are, going to be under the market value for 2 to 3 years in the future. You have that in Gilbert, and you were hoping you would have gotten that with Cortez if it would have worked out. And unfortunately didn't. The health was a big thing. It depends on if the team doctors really understood the risk of the knee injury, if there was a history of it or not, or if it just really came out of nowhere and it kind of, snowballed. And if it was the latter, then it's really kind of hard to fault Kevin Colbert and company, if they knew about the risks beforehand, it's a lot more debatable. Do you want to give a guy a long-term deal that has the risk for these chronic long-term knee injuries? Again, a lot of unknowns going on there. But Dave, I think that, it's a gamble sometimes. You got to take that risk, and it just didn't work out. It's happened before. It'll happen again.
I think if you want to point a finger at the bad decision-making in relation to Cortez Allen, I think it's easier to point back to last offseason prior to the fifth day of the new league year. They had to make a decision whether or not to pay him that $3 million roster bonus.
Mm-hmm. It's so tough to not do that, though, just 1 year into this thing, and you want to try to keep him around and see if he can turn things around.
You go back to comments that Art Rooney II made several weeks ago talking about not ready to give up on certain players. That kind of had, who else could he have been talking about, right?
No, when he was pressed about Cortez, he kind of declined to answer. So, it could be someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
It could be a Jarvis Jones. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true as well, too. But definitely not one that will reflect well in Kevin Colbert's, portfolio. But I can understand why they made that move back prior to 2014. It's just a shame that Cortez Allen, that knee, just not only his knee, but boy, the confidence that he lost early in that 2014 season. I mean, it was just brutal to watch him, watch some of those games and then ultimately get bit.
I think part of that was those new, but heightened pass interference crackdown. He's a guy that plays with a lot of contact, and he was getting penalized more than anybody else. And Carnell Lake does a great job of technique and teaching these guys to play clean. If you look at the numbers, very few penalties in the Steelers secondary, and Cortez was a guy that just really struggled to overcome that even in the limited time that he got.
Now, moving forward with this, in no way, and I think you kind of wrote about this after Cortez was released, this doesn't alter anything that the Steelers were going to do moving forward going into the draft.
Not one bit. And you're right, Dave. I wrote about it because, I write about these things because I get asked about them. And I had several people ask me, does this mean the Steelers take a corner in the first? Does nothing to change the landscape. This team knew that Cortez Allen, even if they wanted to carry him into training camp, was going to be a dart throw. Anything you get from him was a bonus. There was certainly no expectation he was going to make the roster. So it does nothing to change the landscape of cornerback. If they wanted to take one in the first before Cortez, they're still going to feel like that. If they want to take one, you know, later, they still feel like that. It changes absolutely nothing with the long-term future at the position, because Cortez Allen was not in the long-term future of the position.
Right, and even I thought, you know, if they bring him to camp, that there's no guarantee that he makes it out of camp. You know, for the salary he was at the time, over $4 million, it was you make the roster or you're out of here. I mean, you make the starting lineup or you're out of here kind of thing. Now with him gone and completely out of the picture, though, look, we already knew this team was going to draft a cornerback regardless. Mm-hmm. The question now is, do they double dip?
Right. You had written about that yesterday, and of course there's a history there. I think Cortez was part of a double dip, right, with Curtis Brown? Am I right on that?
Right. Fourth round.
Yeah.
And Curtis Brown, but this team just cannot draft, draft cornerbacks. And maybe they'll shake up the maybe they'll surprise us and shake up the process this year. You know, the old only drafting seniors, they never draft them in the first round. I still have my doubts as to whether or not they'll break those long-standing kind of. You know, I don't want to say traditions, because to hear Kevin Colbert talk about it, it's just something that they've never had the opportunity. You know, things haven't fallen right in the draft, you know, to pick a guy in the first round or to pick an underclassman in later rounds. But, you look at the list, and we've gone over it several times, you know, the pre-draft visitor list. I could see them double dipping again, but with that said, you know, what the heck's going? What do they view Dorian Grant as right now? You know, there's been talk about, and Mike Tomlin said maybe as far as him potentially moving to safety. He only played one defensive snap last year. This is the same Dorian Grant that they cut prior to the start of the season. So that tells you right there they were willing to risk losing him at the time. And I think I had even researched it back too. He was the highest draft pick across the league last year to not make a 53-man roster.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know what's going to happen with Dorian Grant. And sorry for this background noise. There's a fire whistle going off in the area. I don't know what's going to happen with Dorian Grant. It could be they're going to wait after the draft and see what the depth chart looks like. And if they're strong at corner and weak at safety, they could move Grant, or, you know, or vice versa. If they're still kind of weaker at corner, they want to keep Grant there. We still know nothing about Dorian Grant after year one. You know, obviously the team's learned a lot about him behind the scenes, but we're not privy to any of that. So I think this team, to kind of circle back to your point, Dave, I think this team very well could double dip. It's a good cornerback class. There's a lot of guys that you like there. So you could see a second and a fourth, or a second and a third, or a first and a third. The combinations are pretty much endless. Like you said, Dave, the team has a history of double dipping, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him do it again.
And when you look beyond, you know, William Gay, Ross Cockrell, Cinquez Golson, regardless of what happens in the draft, those three, I mean, and even regardless, they take a guy like William Jackson in the first round, one would think those three are going to be your starters, right?
Yeah, that's my expectation. I mean, I guess the most likely to get beat out is Ross Cockrell. But I bet you, I think, this is just my guess, but I think internally they're high on him.
Ross Cockrell?
Yeah, Cockrell.
Yeah, I mean, I think so as well, too. He made strides last year.
Yeah, again, I mean, I've said it before, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but to play the snaps that he did at the level that he did with basically no time to learn this defense, I think is really remarkable. And I'm not the biggest fan of him, because he's not really a physical guy that kind of is a typical Steelers corner. But obviously the team, Tomlin, likes him. They looked at him before the draft a couple years ago. He's going to go into his third year, so he's the guy that could really continue to make, you know, really ascend.
However, when you look past those top four, and I'm including Dorian Grant until told otherwise, I'm looking at him as the fourth corner right now. Really don't have much there. You have Isaiah Frey, who, while he does have some NFL experience, you know, in his resume, this is a guy that spent a good portion of the 2015 season on the Steelers practice squad. And behind that, really, you have a bunch of nobodies.
Yeah, no, depth is so important at the position. Dave, the Steelers are very aware of that after what happened last year. You got to have depth. You got to be four and five deep. Isaiah Frey kind of interests me a little bit because he's someone that has an NFL resume. You're going to draft because you have to get some depth.
All right, that'll close the book on Cortez Allen. Now we'll sit back and wait and see where he ultimately winds up, from there. What direction do we want to go here now? I'm not sure if you saw it or not. I have a post going up about this later on today. Dane Brugler did the unthinkable, and it's an unthinkable that you plan on doing here in the next 9 days or so. He tried to do a complete 7-round mock draft for every team, and Lord have mercy, I hope he got paid extra for that. Just a little side note, you will not be paid extra.
For
attempting such a ludicrous thing. Hat tip to anybody who tries it. They're fun to look at. And a guy like Brugler, though, really, who has a lot of knowledge about a lot of players, and I don't want to say extended knowledge about the in and out workings of every NFL franchise and what they need and draft history and tendencies and all like that, but he's one of the more knowledgeable ones. Mm-hmm. And when you look at his 7-round mock that I think was released late last night, he has Andrew Billings going to the Steelers with a 25th overall selection.
Liking it already. Outside
of really us at Steelers Depot, have you seen any of the major media guys connect Andrew Billings to the Steelers in the first round?
Well, since Andrew Billings is not a cornerback, the answer would be no, because it's the only position I hear about.
Absolutely. So I kind of nodded my head going down. Going down the picks there and says, maybe Dane Brugler reads Steelers Depot, But I think moving past that, it's evident that maybe he doesn't.
Oh, no. I have not read this.
New to you. Okay. In round two, a guy that the Steelers have brought in for a pre-draft visit, defensive back T.J. Green, who, some think more of a safety at the NFL level. However, because of kind of his immeasurables and all, some can maybe see him playing cornerback for some teams at the NFL level. T.J. Green, I think one of you guys mm-hmm. broke him down, but he has him going to the Steelers with a 2nd-round pick. And your thoughts?
And he called Green a corner.
He has him a defensive back, okay. But he wrote up a former wide receiver, Green, lined up at safety, but his size/speed combo might push him to corner.
He definitely played safety at Clemson. There was a couple sub-package stuff, a couple things where they did some cap blitzes where Green would cover the receiver as kind of the corner. But he's a safety in my book. He ran really well. He ran a 4.35. The bottom line on Green, I think that's high to put him in the 2nd round. Again, maybe he's hearing something that I'm not. He's just a really raw kid. He's athletic, but right now I see him as kind of a strong safety in the box stumper, and not much else. He's got limited starting experience. Came out as a true junior. To get him in round two in this safety class, especially with a lot of good talent, that seems on the high end to me.
Yeah, and I wrote, and people will be able to read this later today, like I said, quite a reach there, in my opinion. In fact, Brugler, in his own draft guide that I pimped the other day, he put a 5th-round grade on him.
Well, then, maybe he's hearing something, because I think him to do that that drastically, maybe he heard something that we didn't.
The thing with him, 121 total tackles and only one interception during only 16 starts at Clemson. And normally the Steelers, especially when it comes to defensive backs, they like guys with a little. Now, he did play in quite a few games at Clemson, but only had 16 starts. Not great takeaways, numbers when you look at that. In my opinion, comes off maybe a late 3rd-round guy at best. And 4th, 5th round really seems to be the spot for him. Moving on into 3rd round, another kind of head-scratcher from Brugler. He has Arizona State guard Christian Westerman going to the Steelers in the 3rd round, and his reasoning is Pro Bowler David DeCastro was entering a contract year, and Westerman could be the long-term answer. Well, DeCastro, barring really something unforeseen, is going to sign an extension later on this offseason. And on top of that, the Steelers re-signed left guard Ramon Foster to a 3-year contract extension just prior to the start of the new league year. While it's fathomable that the Steelers could select an offensive lineman at some point during this year's draft, if they do, one would think it would be round 6 or round 7, and that included that in that it would be a player that probably played tackle at the college level with the idea that he might could play guard at the NFL level.
Yeah, the Dane's reasoning is a little faulty there, and that is an outside-the-box pick. But honestly, Dave, for me, it's not too outside-the-box. I just wrote up Westerman. I like him a lot. And if the Steelers really, want to surprise a little bit and show that extra commitment to the interior position, which they kind of have done, bringing in Wisniewski and Jeff Schwartz for visits, although obviously neither of them signed. It wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world. I like Westerman a lot. He's a mauler left guard with a little bit of, some nimble feet, and can play a little bit in space. It's not where he's ideal. He's a decent athlete for his frame. And, I like Westerman a lot. So honestly, I can live with that one.
Would you say third round is about right for Westerman?
I think some people have put him a little higher than that, but yeah, I just did the report. I think I actually put like a mid to late third and mentioned that, I could see him as the pick at 89 for Pittsburgh. So, I can get on board with that idea.
So if this was Mythbusters, this would be termed plausible.
Yes, plausible. Yeah, I'm not saying I'd love it, but I need the, what is that, Jamie? I need the big beard that they have. I don't have that.
I think too, this if this happened, a lot of Steelers fans would be imitating the Bruce Arians GIF from last year with him quickly turning his head around.
The thing people have to understand, there's going to be some surprises in every draft. It's not going to be cookie cutter the way we talk about it for months. I mean, the Steelers took Senquez Golson in the second round last year. I don't think you would have seen a single Steelers fan project, the Steelers to do that in the second round. So there's always going to be some surprises and some things that you didn't really hear about.
Kind of playing off of you talk about Senquez Golson there. I went back yesterday and rewatched the post draft press conference of Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin, and he was emphatic that they were trying to trade up to get Golson in the second round. Remember, there was a lot of the talk, I think, prior to the second round getting underway that the Steelers were trying to trade up to get
Max Williams.
Max Williams. And Colbert kind of nipped that in the bud, saying that they were trying to trade up to get Golson instead. Are you buying that 1 year later?
I don't know. I don't really think about it. Probably not. But he's here, and hopefully he contributes like a second round pick.
Let me kind of go forward off that. I plan on maybe writing about this later on today. Remember all the – and I wanted to go back and listen to some of the quotes they said, coming out of that draft with the three defensive backs and them, Colbert really talking about the emphasis on the takeaways and how these guys were ball hawks. And because of that, how surprised would you be now – let alone the rest of the historical stuff that we've gone over and made people sick about. But how surprised would you be if the Steelers did spend a first or second round pick on a defensive back who didn't have more than, say, two takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mentioned several podcasts ago, Dave, was kind of, do you take Mackenzie Alexander? And if you do, that goes against the philosophy that you laid out last year. Or do you realize that, focusing on takeaways makes you do stupid things like take Gerard Holloman? Does that change your mind in the course of one season? Are you happy with the turnovers that you created last year? Tomlin seemed pretty pleased with that. So do you want to switch gears up and do something a little different to complement that? I think it's a big, important question, and I don't have a good answer to that, unfortunately. I wish I did. Like Tomlin says, if I had the answer, I'd bottle it and sell it. But it's something I definitely keep in mind, because that was the thing they said last year. We want to get guys that created turnovers. Mackenzie Alexander didn't do that.
And really, for that matter, Eli Apple only won last year, and what did he have, like three the year before, I think?
Something, yeah, the okay, but not great production.
Right, right. I'd still like to get inside the conversations that went on about Gerard Holloman, because going back, Tomlin pretty much in so many words admitted that he needed work on tackling, but yeah. they said it was no accident all the interceptions that he had, but if you go back and look at all those interceptions, and I think I did in some form or fashion, either GIFs or something. A lot of those were bad decisions by quarterbacks that led to Gerard Holloman and all those interceptions that he had. I shouldn't get upset over a seventh round draft pick, but that still bites me a little bit. As why in the heck you just didn't go in a different direction and draft a guy that maybe has an outside chance of producing down the line.
Yeah.
Moving forward into Dane Brugler's mock draft in the fourth round, he has Utah safety Miles Killebrew. And even though the Steelers have brought in everybody and their brother safety-wise during this pre-draft process, as far as we know, Miles Killebrew hasn't been brought in. Your thoughts on him?
I just wrote the report. It's going to go up later this week. I get the idea because I think the Steelers do have legitimate interest, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they take a hybrid guy that could be, you know, an eventual kind of dime defenses that teams run. I'm just not crazy about Killebrew. Yeah, I mean, the guy can hit, but, I mean, he misses too many tackles. This is a guy that is just a marginal athlete that's not going to do well in man coverage, carrying things down the seam. His play for me, Dave, was just too inconsistent at the FCS level to sit there and say that this guy's got a real chance to make the jump.
Fourth round generous with him?
I mean, I put a real late grade on him, and many people that I respect, amateur draft scouts kind of feel the same way. I think Killebrew ultimately probably goes in that, fourth to fifth round. I'm just not crazy about him. I wouldn't do it.
356 total tackles and three interceptions in 45 games that he started at Southern Utah. Dane had another surprise for us in round six. He has the Steelers selecting Utah punter Tom Hackett.
An Aussie kid. He's I don't know a ton about him. I know that he's an Aussie kid, and him and Jordan Berry can just reminisce, I guess.
How surprised would you be if the Steelers drafted a punter?
I had a couple, fan speak mock drafts I just do for fun. I put Hackett in there a couple times. Maybe they're going to recreate the Sepulveda magic, but I don't think it'll happen.
I'll try to edit this out of the podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't know.
Yeah,
you threw me for a loop there. We can have some punters of people, too.
Punters are not people, too.
Tell that to Chris Clooney.
Look, this team won a Super Bowl with who?
Who was the – was it not Paul – not Paul Ernster, was it?
Mitch Berger.
Yes, thank you. Yes, the that was the year where they went back and forth because Berger got hurt. Ernster came in and did worse than an injured Mitch Berger, and they brought – yeah, that was a whole – wasn't the long snapper Jared Witowski that year too because Warren got hurt?
Yeah.
So
yeah. He went from moving furniture to being a Steelers long snapper. So I can't believe I had it right on my tip of my tongue until you started rattling off some names there. Mitch Berger, hard to believe. Let's see here. Finishing on with Dane Brugler's seven round mock draft. Two offensive players going to the Steelers in round seven, Georgia running back Keith Marshall and Bowling Green wide receiver Roger Lewis. So he has, let's see, one, two, three offensive players and a punter going to the Steelers in the seven round mock draft. Have you watched any? I know I haven't. I haven't watched any film on Keith Marshall, and nor have I watched any film on Bowling Green wide receiver Roger Lewis.
Well, Marshall was a guy that turned a lot of heads at the combine. It feels like once a year every Georgia kid does it. Chris Conley did it last year. Marshall can fly. He ran in the low 4.3s. I think his bench press numbers, impressive. So he's a big, strong, fast kid. That I think dealt with some injury issues, but there's a lot of upside there. I don't think he's going to last to the seventh, if you ask me personally, because he has that upside. Roger Lewis is a guy that plays faster than he timed. A lot of people have raved about him. The Steelers, of course, have had a lot of success taking late round Mac guys. So I think that'd be a fun flyer to take.
Do you remember if he fit that study that you did?
Roger Lewis, no, his 40 time wasn't. I think off the top of my head, I think Lewis ran like a 4.56, and that would have put him well off the radar.
Okay, now that we destroyed that, here's one thing, and I'm posting this as well in the Dane Brugler mock draft. Instead of just sitting here and ripping Dane Brugler, which is the easy thing to do, kind of making an exercise out of this I think would be fun. So in other words, what I want you to do is in the comment section, if you have time, I want you to look at Dane Brugler's complete mock draft that's going to be linked to in that, and I want you to mock players to the Steelers, but you can only do so with players that were selected that were still on the board between picks, if that makes sense. For example, if you wanted to give the Steelers Sterling Shepard in the second round, you could not do that because he was picked after the Steelers, what would it be? Second or after the Steelers' second or after the Steelers' third round selection, I think. I'll post the full rules on this, but it's kind of how we've done in the past. Post the real mocks, we've kind of had those exercises in the past. You cannot select a player that has been selected after the complete round has turned. In other words, there should be, you know, a list of about, what is it, 31 players, I think, that you should be able to choose, 30 to, depending on the round with the compensatory picks that you should be able to choose from between rounds. It'd be interesting to make a mock draft based on that. Mm-hmm. Do you understand that?
Yeah, you lost me for a second there, but I think I understand the overall point you're trying to make, and I'm sure the readers will too. I mean, I don't hate that mock from Dane Brugler. Of course, it's hard to hit everything on the nose and hit everything perfectly for all 32 teams. It wouldn't be my favorite mock, of course, but I can appreciate it, and I don't disagree with a ton of it. TJ Green is probably the biggest one I have a gripe with.
And maybe the punter.
But I mean, it's not like this team is secured at punter. Someone's got to take a punter.
Let's see. Let's end this show by talking a little bit about some recent guys that you already have up your profiles on.
I just did the one on Jay Lee today, and we're trying to hit the guys that the Steelers have been reported to have interest in or have definitely brought in for the pre-draft 30. Gerald Hawkins went up today, the tackle from LSU. Lee's measurables don't scream Steeler to me. 4.53 in the 40, a 33.5-inch vertical, a 9.11 in the broad at his pro day. But he's a guy that's really raw. Played in that funky, quirky Baylor offense, but he's a big guy. I think he's quick to the tuck. He showed some big play, deep threat ability. I think he's a guy that definitely needs a year, but I think that's a perfect home in Pittsburgh to do that, is to take a year. And hopefully in 2017, if you lose Marcus Wheaton, you could have a guy like Jay Lee contribute. So, Jay Lee's got a lot of work to do to try to be something in the NFL, but I can see the allure of Pittsburgh, and it wouldn't surprise me to take, him in the, late sixth or with one of their seventh-round picks. I'm trying to think who else I've written about. A couple of guys I've just kind of done because I already had some notes on them. Matt Ioannidis from Temple. I don't think he really fits Pittsburgh. He could go to Cincinnati, though. I think I have one coming up on Sheldon Day that's similar.
Aaron Green. You did one on Aaron Green, didn't you?
Yeah, Aaron Green, the TCU running back. Just, if the Steelers do take a running back in the later rounds. I'm not a huge fan of Green, though. He's a shifty guy that can, make some cuts, but I think his vision is poor. Benefited from the TCU spread offense. Not really a power guy. Either they need some work in pass protection. I just want to take a second here because, you had written about Joey Porter. Steelers.com's done some cool draft stories on some of these guys, leading up to the draft and their own memories. And Joey Porter had a cool story, right, Dave?
He thought he was going to be a Cowboy in the second round of the 1999 NFL draft. The Cowboys kind of wined and dined him and gave, I believe, his brother a cell phone to hold during the draft. They obviously wound up not going that direction. They took an offensive lineman, Solomon Page, who wound up really he was a Pittsburgh native, played his college football at West Virginia. They of course bypassed on Joey Porter. I think I think, as the story goes, as Teresa Varley wrote on Steelers.com, that they called to ask for the cell phone back, so to speak. So the sad thing is that really Joey Porter only got to play against the Cowboys once during the regular season during his time in Pittsburgh. I think he played him one other time. I think it was as a member of the Miami Dolphins. But by the time he finally did get around to playing against the Cowboys, Solomon Page was no longer with the Cowboys at that time. So interesting little story. Hard to imagine Joey Porter,
yeah,
you know, playing in a Cowboys uniform, and being as how the Steelers do play the Cowboys this year during the 2016 season, you have to wonder somewhere in the back of Joey Porter's mind the Steelers or the Cowboys kind of not following through with what they told him will be in the back of his mind.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll try to keep Joey off the field, unlike last year's wild card game. Maybe that'd be best for everybody. The other cool story was, and we didn't write about it, but they did this feature on John Colb, the drafted in 1969, and the story goes, and you can read it the full thing on Steelers.com. But he didn't know where he was going to go, but Pittsburgh was the only team that showed no interest in him, that never showed up for his workouts or didn't look at him or didn't talk to him or anything. So he would tell reporters, "I don't know where I'm going, but it's not going to be Pittsburgh." And so what ended up happening, of course, he went to Pittsburgh, and he ends up getting the phone call, and it's Art Rooney on the line. And, Art Rooney saying, "Are you excited to come to Pittsburgh?" And here's Kolb thinking, well, it can't be Pittsburgh. He thought it was a joke. He thought it was a roommate playing a prank on him or a friend or somebody. So he just was very rude to Art Rooney. He was like, "No, I'm not excited to come to Pittsburgh." And then he realized, I think the next day when the news reported it, that he had gone to Pittsburgh. So he immediately called Rooney back and apologized. And when he got to Pittsburgh, he apologized. So your first interaction with your owner is you being a real jerk to the guy. So that was but it all worked out. He was a really great player for Pittsburgh.
And a quick shout-out to Russ Ruffing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you read that post went up on Saturday. Russ did a great job, great research involved in attempting to rank the Steelers draft classes, going back to the Joe Green draft class. And he really put a lot of work in there, laid out his methodology in the introduction there. I think he would probably agree, based on kind of the comments that post received, that thing could probably be tweaked a little bit, but quite a huge undertaking, and it's hard to really argue with some of the rankings that he has, right?
Yeah, no, it was a great job. If you haven't read it, take a long lunch, because it's quite the read, but some good stuff there.
So, Russ, we appreciate you reaching out to us, who knows? Maybe we'll be able to have you post more frequently on the site. Quite a few donations have come in over the course of the week as well, too. So I want to spend a little time thanking William Hall, Nicholas Chambers, H. Tyson, Matthew Forbes. I believe all those guys donated since the last show, so thank you very much for that. Alex, I think we're running out of time here, but we managed to fill up another hour's worth of content here during the off season, and we didn't have to recycle a lot of the old stuff that we've hit on as well, too. So I think that's a plus. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let's see, what else is there? If you want to donate, please go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button in the top navigational bar. And until Friday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.